Thank you for joining us today. This is part of a series of interviews that we're having with ISVs that have experienced success in moving part of their business or all of their business to the cloud. And one of the questions that we get from a lot of ISVs is, should we start with maybe just the hosting our .NET application? Should we rewrite our application to multi-tenant running on Azure from the beginning? What are the steps that are necessary to do that? So today I'm going to be interviewing Jason Jacobs, who has gone through this process. His company, Channeltivity, is a self-funded organization that has a partner relationship management software that's done very well with it. And he started off his existence as a subscription model, so he's always been a subscription model, but initially as a .NET application hosted in a virtual machine environment. 3 years ago, he made the decision to rewrite the application as multi-tenant, pure multi-tenant running on Azure. And we really appreciate Jason taking the time today to share his experiences with us. So Jason, I'm going to turn it over to you first, and if you would just provide a little bit of background on your company, your product, the target market, and give us a little bit of context for your business.
Sure. So Channeltivity has been in existence since 2007. I think like a lot of companies, it spun out of a web app development shop and realized that we had a product on our hands. I joined the company in 2010. I had exited a SaaS company the previous year, back when we didn't even call it SaaS. We started that one in 2001, and luckily someone gave it a nice acronym. And that was quite successful, but I learned a lot of lessons about building applications for scalability, because I actually didn't build it for scalability the first time, and it was very painful. So when we got into Channeltivity, 2010, Azure really was kind of in its infancy in terms of, you know, where you could go and get a well-defined cloud service to migrate to. And we decided very quickly that, you know, if we were going to scale this thing, what we couldn't have was, especially doing it self-funded. My first company I did venture capital backed. That comes with a lot of benefits and also comes with a lot of distraction. We couldn't have done the last company without that, because the capital expenditure on the machines that we would only be able to put, you know, one tenant on at a time, and then we, you know, buy a very expensive virtual machine that we could put 100 on. Well, it was only generating revenue, positive cash flow, after it was 50% full. And so we saw the opportunity at Channeltivity to move over to the Azure platform. A little bit about the company.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, it's just going to stop you a little bit and back up a little so we understand the company, the technology, who you're selling to, and what your activities are.
Right. So we are a partner relationship management solution. So everyone's familiar with customer relationship management, very popular systems out there that everyone knows of that helps manage that relationship. We identified that there was a need for managing the channel partners. Most specifically, we focus on technology companies. Selling technology to technology companies is actually a delightful thing to do. And so we focus on that market exclusively. There's a lot of other industries that have channels, but we do not go into those, particularly financial, telecommunications, and pretty much anything that revolves around any sort of regulation we stay away from. So we like to focus on tech companies. We have companies that whose names you wouldn't recognize, there's, you know, upcoming startups, all the way up to Samsung and Vonage and you know, divisions of companies like that. We typically focus on emerging, venture-backed, or mid-sized companies, typically have under 2,000 channel partners, though that is not a rule. We can certainly manage more. It's not a function of hosting or load or anything like that. So our client base tends to hover around that sub 2,000 partner range. And right now we're approaching... Well, actually, we just surpassed this month our 100th customer, which is kind of a nice milestone.
Yeah.
We're bringing on board between 3 to 5 new customers every month. We do complete inbound lead generation, which is a topic for another day. We've been growing our recurring revenue. Recurring revenue is 99% of our revenue. We've built the system to be completely self-enabled, self-provisioning. Requires very little help from us to get up and running. And those were all keys to successful SaaS companies. But the primary thing was getting onto a platform that would allow us our hosting costs to scale linearly with our customer base.
What does a typical transaction look like?
In terms of revenue?
Yeah. How many users? How do you structure it?
So in partner relationship management, we decided early on that user-based pricing models really don't align with how partners use systems. With a CRM, it makes sense because it's the first application a sales guy or marketing person turns on in the morning. It's the last thing they close out before they go to bed at night. It's an everything application. They're always in it. Partners, on the other hand, are on a needs base. I need a marketing document. I need to register a deal. I need to pick up a lead from the partner. I need to request market development funds. And so, kind of walking you through what our system does. We do not charge by user. We have an a la carte pricing menu that allows people to choose just the modules that they want to employ, because every channel program is different, and you know, some people do lead distribution, some people don't. Some people do market development funds, some people don't. So we built it so you could just pay for what you use and derive value. And it's fixed pricing. It's published on our website, so anyone can go and take a look at it. We have a very open, simple pricing model that anyone can kind of wrap their head around. And on average, I'd say 50% of our customers are using the base system, which is the portal management and the partner management. And on top of that, they're doing deal reg and MDF. And then there's sort of a tailing off there where 25% of the people use, we have a handful of other integrations too with other systems. So our top end that anyone could really spend with us is about $2,500 a month if they did everything, including single sign-on and custom applications embedded in the portal, because we have that flexibility. And at the low end, we also have an entry-level package that we call Launch, and it's for people that are launching their channel program. We want to give them the full set of tools so that they can put their best foot forward and have a system they can scale into. And there are limits on that. That's all posted on the website at channeltivity.com. So we're very transparent with pricing. There's very nominal setup fees that we just use to kind of enhance that level of support that we give to people during the first 3 months. That's kind of what a typical transaction looks like.
Are you using partners at all? Are you using partners to sell to partner organizations?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a cobbler's children have no shoes. We do sell through partners, but our partner base are either technology partners that are an add-on to our system. So Litmus software, for instance, which is a learning management system. People will sign up for Litmus and we'll embed it in our portal and in the system through single sign-on. There's a company called Sprout Loud, which does a lot of on-demand print marketing material and email marketing, and we've got a nice integration with them. And so we end up sharing customers together. It tends to be more that it's a Channeltivity customer that wants to buy their thing, but as long as we're adding value to our customer base, we're happy with that kind of partner. It also helps broaden the solution without us having to manage code for things that already exist, like learning management.
Well, you've touched on it already and talked a little bit about it, but what was the compelling reason for sitting down and making the change? So Channeltivity started 2007 in a virtual machine environment, and then someone sat down and said, no, we can't do this anymore. So what was the compelling reason? What was the driving factor in moving towards rebuilding the product on Azure?
Well, I was self-funding this company, and I didn't want to write big checks. That's what it boiled down to. To a degree, it was a financial decision, but we also saw the writing on the wall that there is all applications. There's first the migration out of the back closet data center that companies had, onto a hosted environment because the hosting companies can do it better, and that business model lasted for about 20 years, and then it turned into cloud as virtualization and large companies who already had these existing assets could leverage these data centers in a different way. And so we just kind of saw where this was going, and having taken lessons from my last company about scalability, And for a SaaS company, cash flow is a real tough thing. Your revenues, year month over month, they're like watching grass grow. And it's usually until about year five where you're like, okay, we're stable, we've got positive cash flow. And so the one barrier to entry is really if you're not going into a cloud environment, you're going to run into this dilemma frequently for the first 5 years of we have to buy another server. And that server's not going to generate any revenue, meaningful revenue for, 6 months, but you have to buy it. And right. So that was key. The other thing was that we saw a lot of support from Microsoft, actually, to move to this. The pricing model was really compelling and quite fair. And, if we look at history, Microsoft sometimes has a habit of looking at business applications that have been written on their foundations and sometimes saying, those are interesting. And so, at a long-term strategy, more of a wish, is that someday this looks like an attractive thing to bundle into, say, Microsoft Dynamics.
Right. So you mentioned you didn't like writing those big checks. Did you actually sit down and do a financial analysis on what the difference would be in cost structure?
Yeah, we did a cash flow analysis. I mean, in the end, you buy a server, you put it in the facility, there's the cost of the facility. It was pretty easy calculation, but it's a return on asset calculation. We're putting this money in place. Is this a wise investment? Versus really treating, and it's a depreciation type, environment there. Versus this should just be a linear expense, and it's really back of the napkin math. You can figure out that it's a no-brainer. You're writing big checks, which in an early stage of the company impacts cash flow terribly. You're not getting the full write down on it, so you can't expense it, so you're getting double whammy there. You have to do it in order to bring customers on board, and so you have a great month and you have your worst cash flow month.
Right.
Because you have to go and drop a bunch of money on the server. And then all the labor, we were still administering these things and maintaining and doing backups, and it just became a lot easier. A lot of factors. Larger clients saying, what's your... there was a credibility factor, too. I can't let this go by. Where are you hosted? Oh, we're hosted at Equinox. What's that? Well, here's their website. Well, what's your SLA? It lengthens sales cycles. Huh. So we said, look, where do you host? We're on Microsoft Azure. End of discussion. No more questions. Okay. And so that was I would say, the surprise, the unintended consequence. Mm-hmm. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but suddenly selling became a lot easier.
Yeah, we're seeing that as well, that Microsoft is well regarded for the level of security, the scalability, the whole hosting infrastructure that they have. But there are a couple of elements in the equation that ISVs need to look at. One is, we don't have to do the stair-step investment in VMs and infrastructure anymore because we're multi-tenant, we just scale as we need to scale. But then the front-end decision for many is, we have to rewrite our application to some extent. They might have the benefit of being .NET, so it's an easier migration, but it's still an investment in rewriting the application. So what were the steps that you went through, and was it really onerous? Was it a terrible struggle financially to do it? What was the time frame necessary to rewrite your application? Recognizing that applications are all different, but how much of a process was that for you?
So two things happen whenever you start talking rewrite, and I think the kiss of death for a lot of companies is they underestimate the fact that you cannot put your current product on hold. I learned this the hard way. When you do a rewrite and you keep telling people, all these fixes and all these enhancements are going to be in the next generation while you're doing a rewrite, you're setting yourself up for a pretty big fall. So what we had to consider was we have to keep our current product roadmap on track. We have to write things in considering that we're going to be migrating it. So we have almost some things we had to write twice. But what we did is we gave ourselves a longer time horizon. We knew that this was this wasn't a Y2K. I'm dating myself there. This wasn't a Y2K event. Where we had to get onto this thing because the hosting facilities were going away. It was a we need to do this because it's financially sound, it's scalable, and we need to do it in a way that that our customers don't even notice. And by noticing, I mean one day they opened up their system and it was running on our servers, the next day it was running on Azure and they didn't know.
I wanted to ask you about that, because that is a concern for some companies, and that is, how do you migrate your customers from a hosted environment to a new platform? Was that a seamless migration for your customers?
It was. I think largely because we were already running on Microsoft technology, and so there's a lot of stuff that... migration usually becomes a data issue, and to some degree a UI issue. And we could successfully recreate our data structures identically. There was no data migration. It was more of a import, if you will. We had them running in parallel, but the key was our UI didn't change, didn't have to change. And so that made it easy.
Were there any licensing issues? Because if it's a VM hosted environment, then you still need the end user license agreement. If it's a pure SaaS solution with nothing installed on the desktop, and maybe you do have a client software on the desktop, it becomes more of an SLA, a services contract. So did you have to notify your customers that you were changing the platform, that you're moving their data to someplace else?
In our contracts, we don't go into great detail about the whereabouts of hosting or how it's being done. We do offer SLAs in there, and we just had to ensure that so legally we weren't bound to tell them. We told them because we thought it was a positive, that we were building on this platform and that it would, here were the benefits that they would see. So we chose to tell them, but it depends how your contracts are written. Mm-hmm. If all you have to do is meet an SLA, the customer really can't tell you how you go about doing that. If they have, then you've probably got some work ahead of you to redo contracts. So that would just be a function of every company and how they've set up their master services agreements.
Okay. So now that you've been through this process, were there any unexpected benefits or any unexpected challenges that you had to deal with?
No challenges. To be very clear, Microsoft was very helpful. We got great support. There was, obviously the challenge of not pushing that part of our roadmap. And that was a very long-haul roadmap. 9 to 12 months was our estimate. And it becomes very easy to extend that by a month, And so the challenge was balancing that with feature roadmaps and, our product roadmap is 80% driven by our customers. They come in with great ideas. We process them through a filtering process. We look for statistics on utilization and interview other customers. And so we didn't want them to feel that things had slowed down. And so that was the challenge. It was extra effort. We didn't add fundamentally to the team, I think largely because we had a good resource in Microsoft to answer our questions quickly. We didn't have to go hire an expert at doing this. They were supportive. So we became experts at doing it, and we only did it once. So that was really the biggest challenge. The only unexpected, positive unintended consequence was how much easier it became in the sales process. I always used to dread having to dig into our SLA component because we hosted at a lot of people don't know the names of really good hosting facilities. They know Rackspace, that's about all. But there's a lot of good commercial hosting companies out there that they're not brand names, so you have an uphill battle. And so that was the biggest win for us. It's rare that during a rewrite the sales team gets a win.
Well, this has been really helpful, Jason. This is an issue that a lot of ISVs are struggling with, especially the on-prem guys, on how they migrate. We see a lot of companies that decide, well, let's just host it first, and we'll set up a VM environment, and then when the market proves itself, we'll move into a re-architected, rebuild product and multi-platform. So when you're sitting there talking to this audience, the ISVs out there, are there any suggestions or recommendations that you would make for them as they're sitting at the front end of this thought process?
So if they're front end, if they're a new company, it's sort of a no-brainer. Everyone's building it on cloud, on Azure from the get-go. It would be like writing a desktop application today before you put it in a browser. No one's going to write an operating system-specific application unless it's a mobile app, which is a totally different topic. But if they're starting out, that's a pretty easy answer. If they're looking at migrating a mature product, you're going to have to bite the bullet and do it at some point. Better to take eat the whale one bite at a time. Give yourself plenty of time to do it so that you're not pushing off features and fixes and having any sort of negative impact on your customer base. The financial arguments for it are just—it's just a no-brainer. You're going to be there at some point, and I think the hard thing is, but we have all this infrastructure investment that's worthless. What are we going to do with it? Because you can't resell that stuff. I mean, it's unfortunately worthless the moment you buy it, even though it's on your balance sheet. So you're going to have to do it, and if you have investors and you got to sell all that, I had to sell to my first investors in my first company that didn't write this quite correctly and we need to do a rewrite. That's not a fun conversation to have, but it's better to have that conversation than, we can't scale. And so that would be my only advice. Give yourself plenty of runway. Put it in your plan, budget for it, and swallow the bitter pill with the investors if you have to.
Well, thank you very much, Jason. This has been very helpful. Again, this is a key issue, a question that a lot of ISVs are struggling with. And it's an important part of their decision process as to when, how fast they should move to the cloud. So this was very helpful. And for those that are viewing this, I would encourage you to come back for part two of the interview. We'll be talking to Jason about using automation tools for sales and marketing as a way of driving down the customer acquisition costs. Again, a very key aspect of a SaaS business model. So Jason, thank you very much for your insights today.
Thank you, Carol.